But this paper is going to collect bits and pieces of things that I've have appeared in different ones of the books that Jimmy and I have written. Last year was the 400th anniversary of the translation of the Bible, and it was an occasion to reflect on the importance of the written word, Revelation, and the place it has played in our culture. Not to say Yahweh. So whenever you find those four letters capitalized, it isn't Lord that appears in the text. It is the name of God that God commanded us to name by. Yahweh. You can just call me Yahweh. Another tradition, being a Baptist, I'll hit this one hard. When the English Bible was being translated, they came up across the Greek word baptizo. And, oh my goodness, we can't translate that one because we don't do that one anymore. So instead of translating it, it was transliterated as baptize rather than dunk. No, we won't get into that argument today, but just tradition, just a matter of tradition. But there are traditions related to the first chapter of Genesis. The first one with the very first word. Breshit, in beginning. Now, we always translate it in the beginning. Why? Tradition. Tradition. The things that you do, because that's the way we do them, and then the commentators who do the translations, then get to write a commentary on Genesis and say, of course, the actual text says, but we didn't translate it that way. What I'd like for us to focus on for a few minutes is the 7 days of creation in the first chapter of Genesis and a tradition that the King James Bible continues, because it is not the first English translation. It is a continuation of a tradition that goes back to John Wycliffe. Now, I'm doing a terrible thing to you. I'm putting up the Hebrew text, and when we find the days, the traditional translation is the first day, the second day, the third day, the fourth day, the fifth day, the sixth day. Oops. The seventh day, only that's not what the Hebrew text says. God said, let there be light one day. Not the first day, just one day. And then he went on to create, and something happened, not the second day. So it isn't that something happened on Sunday and then something happened on Monday. It happened on a second day, then a third day, a fourth day, a fifth day, not until we get to the sixth day when we have us introduced. Do you find the definite article? So in Hebrew, the definite article is not used for the order of the days. Now, there is a Hebrew definite article. It's a simple little thing. And if you want to find it, if you've got one of those Bibles that in the 119th Psalm, remember the 119th Psalm is the longest Psalm because it's actually a collection of Psalms, and there's one Psalm for every letter in the Hebrew alphabet. And so Psalm 119, verses 33 to 40, you'll find the psalm built around this letter, hey. And that's the definite article. Now, what's the significance of this, just in terms of how language works? Well, one day I was born. A second day, I started preaching. A third day, I started being married to Marianne Whitten. A fourth day, I started being a father to Rebecca and then to Mary Ellen. A fifth day, I started living in Minnesota. The sixth day, I started working at Union. I'm still in the sixth day. I'm still in the third day. I'm still in the fourth day. I'm no longer in the fifth day. The seventh day, I die. Now, this is the grammatical thrust of the first chapter of Genesis. That is, you have the progression, you have a linear. The pagans did. It's not the nature religion understanding of time. There's a direction to time, which clearly marks it out from the other ancient cultures of the world. And yet, with the Hebrews, there's not a preoccupation with counting or measuring time. The emphasis is on the quality of the time and what takes place. In Hebrew verbs, there is no past, present, or future. They have tenses, but they are not temporal tenses. And we're used to temporal tenses. Present tense, future tense. In Hebrew verbs, the emphasis is on the action. So the imperfect tense denotes incomplete or ongoing action. And the verbs in the first chapter of Genesis, after the first verse, are in this ongoing action sense. The perfect tense in the Hebrew verbs indicates completed action, but it can be completed action in the past, completed action in the present, or action. Notice in the prophecies, when you get to the book of the prophets, and the prophets declare the word of God, they're often translated in past tense. Because for God to say He's going to do something is to say that it is complete and as good as done. And this is our idea of hope. For God to say something is going to happen, we have a sure and certain hope that's much more concrete than this floor we're on. So this idea of what's going on with the verbs. The first verb in the Bible is, it's in the past tense, created. In the beginning, God created. And that is completed action. Notice, before there's any description of what God does, it's done. And it's the totality. Everything that will ever come into being, God did it, even though it happens in the future. And then that governs the action of these days of creation. Now, another thing about this, first chapter. We have the conjunction in English, and. In Hebrew, it's and then. When it's in an imperfect tense, you're having a sequence. And then God said. So you have this progression of sequential order. Now, you've got one very curious thing, though, that happens in the middle on the fourth day. On the fourth day, the sun and the moon show up. And you've got, this is one of the places that the naturalists point to and say how ludicrous. You know, it's, and a lot of people waste a lot of time trying to come up with a defense that, no, God didn't create the sun and the moon until after, you know, everything else had happened. But one of the peculiarities of the Hebrew mindset and understanding of time and sequence. And I'm illustrating it here with the menorah, the candlestick of the temple. And notice with the menorah, the first candle and the fourth candle are linked. The second candle and the fifth candle are length. The third candle and the sixth candle are length. And that seventh one, it's different. Let there be light, and let there be heavenly bodies to govern the day and the night. You see what's going on? That's the first thing that's intriguing about this. The second thing is, there's a Hebrew thought pattern that in the middle of what you're saying, you go back to an earlier point. And this is a different kind of a conjunction than the "and then." Now, when you're doing a historical sequence, you use the "and thens." But then the Hebrew shifts to a different kind of a verb pattern. And I'm going to give it to you in an entirely different context. Jesus is speaking. He's in Jerusalem. He's talking about the end times. This is in Luke chapter 21. I'm going to begin with verse 10. "Then he said to them, 'Nation will rise up against nation and kingdom against kingdom.'" That's one. "There will be earthquakes, famines, and pestilence in various places." That's two. "And fearful events and great signs from heaven." That's three. By the way, you can take this section and go to the seven seals, the seven trumpets, and the seven bowls of wrath in the book of Revelation, and you'll find the same sequence of seven. And in the middle, verse 12, he comes to the fourth in the sequence. "But before all this," which throws you earlier. You see what's going on? You've got that same on the fourth day of creation in the book of Genesis. It's a different kind of a conjunction, and it throws you to an earlier period. Because the emphasis isn't on the measurement of time, on the quality of what's happening. That should be sufficiently confusing, because we don't think that way. We measure things. Now, when the Hebrew text came into Greek, this is known as the Septuagint, and it's usually denoted by scholars with the Roman numerals LXX for 70. And that's because we don't know what 70 means. So that's consistent with scholarship. It might have taken 70 days to translate it, or there might have been 70 scholars involved in it. Nobody knows why the Septuagint, which means 70, is called the Septuagint. But anyway, that's what it is, and it's the Greek translation of the Old Testament, or the Torah. And this was the Bible used by Jesus. This was the Bible used by Jews all over the, not just the Roman Empire, but into Persia. By this time, by the time of Jesus, the average Jew did not know Hebrew. Remember, Jesus quoted 22nd Psalm from the cross. Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. That's Hebrew. And remember, the crowd said, "He's calling out to Eli, or Elijah," because they didn't understand what he was saying. Okay, so they're using the Greek Bible. And in Greek, the Greek also has a definite article that can be used. It does not use the definite article because the Hebrew does not use the definite article. And so in the Septuagint, it's one day. Day one, day second, day third, day fourth, day fifth, day sixth. The day the sixth, the day the seventh. So you only have the definite article when you get to the end. Otherwise, it's this indeterminate amount of time between the days. Another thing I should say while we're still on the... Well, we're not still on them, but I'm going back to them, because it looks like I've got enough time to do it. Another thing about the verbs and the tenses. It isn't God said, let there be light. And then God begins to say and continues to say, let there begin to be and continue to keep on being light. That is, it's not a static moment. It is a continuing, ongoing moment. It's reflected in the New Testament where we're told that He sustains, He upholds the universe by His mighty word of power. It's this continuing, ongoing action. And you'll find that with all of the acts of creation in those seventh days. And it isn't let there be life, and there was life. And then he begins to say and continues to keep on saying, let the waters begin to bring forth and keep on continuing bringing forth life. That idea, this dynamic, ongoing activity of God's involvement in creation. But also, it stretches out what He's doing beyond the day He began doing it. So you've got the day He began doing something before which there was not. You know, there was a time before which there were no plants. There was a time before which there were no animals. But you have the movement from then on. So we've got the Greek text that continues translating the Hebrew text as it was. Then we get to the Latin Vulgate. Okay, the Roman Empire is falling apart. People don't speak the universal language anymore. Augustine, the great theologian of the West, did not know Greek. He knew Latin. And so we have the Latin translation. And how many of you had Latin in high school? All right. Do you remember the definite article in Latin? There's not one. There's not a definite article. It is impossible to render into Latin the force of the Greek and the Hebrew. There's not an equivalent word. So, it's day one, day second, day third, day fourth. This is like Russian. Russian does not have the definite article. So, for 1,000 years, the Vulgate held sway. The memory of Greek and Hebrew was lost. And you have a new worldview dominated by Platonic... Oops. Well, here we are. Thought patterns. And we get to the first English text, Wycliffe's Bible. And Wycliffe introduces the definite article. And so here we have a new tradition. So light happened a day. But then you have the second day, the third day, the fourth day, the fifth day, the sixth day, and the seventh day. And the beginnings of a tradition. Now, we also have here, Ted, the pre-thought that would bring forth the scientific revolution. And you have a lot of things going on philosophically in this late medieval church. And arguments between the Platonists and the Aristotelians. And this would come forward so that by the time you get to the English translation of 1611, and the Puritans, with their emphasis on the literal word corresponding to the scientific revolution of the particular and just the facts, ma'am, this is the scientific way to do it. Because you're now bringing it into a measurement of time. But in doing so, you are tagging not just your theology, but your revelation to a particular understanding. Very dangerous thing to do. Of the modern translations, the only ones I'm familiar with that actually render the Hebrew text as it's written would be the American Standard Version, which never did catch on, and the Jewish Bible, the Tanakh. And with that, I'll stop. Any questions or comments?